Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
So like many of you, I have trouble sleeping. I have insomnia. No matter what I tried, it wouldn't work until I met Mike Lindell and I got my very own MyPillow. It has changed my life. What makes MyPillow so different is MyPillow's patented adjustable fill. In other words, you can adjust the patented fill to your exact individual needs so you get the support you need and want to help you get to sleep faster and stay asleep longer. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-919-6090. Remember, use the promo code Hannity. When you do, Mike Lindell will give you his best offer ever. Buy one pillow and get another one absolutely free. MyPillow, made in the USA, 10-year unconditional warranty, and it has a 60-day, no-questions-asked money-back guarantee. You have nothing to lose. So it's time for you to start getting the quality of sleep that you've been wanting and we need. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Promo code Hannity. Take advantage of Mike's special two-for-one offer. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. All right, happy Monday, and we're glad you're with us. A lot of news today that we will hit, and we will hit in detail. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. I will get rid of that. See? Perfect. All right, there we go. Yeah, you can do that one, too. You know, I love people right over my shoulder fixing something while I'm in the middle of the show. Sad story at what we all watched over the weekend in Texas at this church. I mean, it just, you know, you go to church. And now you're going to get gunned down in the church pews. I mean, this is what it's become. I will say this, that I have said with all these school shootings, Democrats, liberals, they all rush to the predictable same argument about guns, 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 guns. There's a lot of different ways if you have evil in your heart and you want to kill somebody that you can do it. Now, there were heroes in this particular case that actually tracked this guy down. He ended up killing himself. But they had guns which stopped further people from being killed, potentially, and much more. Now, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, we had 26 churchgoers in Sutherland Springs, Texas yesterday that were murdered. And he said it's more than a random act of violence, talking about the connection between the suspect and the family. There was apparently a domestic issue, domestic situation, where the Texas Department of Public Safety earlier today identified the shooter as Devin Kelly, 26, and apparently the in-laws of this particular guy had attended services at this First Baptist Church. They were not there during the deadly rampage. The pastor's daughter, 5 years old, was killed in that church. Actually, I think it was the wife, the mother. Did you hear her comments? It breaks your heart. It was 14. One family, at least 8 victims were members of the same family. I mean, it was a massacre for all of these people. And the only thing I can say is what I said during, if you have school shootings, put police, armed guards, former police, former military guys in schools. I don't understand this let's all be sitting duck mentality out there. How about we have the first line of defense where these people target, which is so often no-go zones? There was one boy, 5, is the only one left after the Texas shooting in that family. I mean, that is breaks your heart. How do you deal with that? Unbelievable. Anyway, it's evil. The governor said what I want to convey is I don't think this was a random act of violence. It was two things. One, a very deranged individual who I understand long before he was dishonorably discharged from the United States military, demonstrating some mental illness challenges. And then the other thing is what I'm telling you. Now, apparently, there is video of the church shooting available. I know law enforcement has it. Here's one thing nobody will tell you, and you should know this. As tragic, as horrible, and it is horrible, this is an average weekend in Chicago. Because this past weekend, ABC News Chicago reported 29 people were shot this weekend. 29. That's an every weekend occurrence. And Dead Fish hasn't done anything to fix it. The police know how to fix this. Police know how to, they know about law and order, search, stop and frisk. They know who the bad guys are, but you can't do a thing because of, quote, civil libertarian values. I don't want to take any bit away anybody's rights. I believe in the Second Amendment, but if you're going to have a gun, you better have it legal. And you better make sure you know how to use the thing and protect other people, innocent people, and know how to handle one properly. It's that simple. 38-year-old guy was killed in the most recent fatal shooting. That happened on Sunday in South Shore neighborhood, 7:20 p.m. 4:26, a 36-year-old man was killed in Westtown in a shooting near the west side. He was shot in the head, pronounced dead at the scene. You got a 26-year-old man shot to death at 1:24 a.m. Sunday in Washington Heights neighborhood on the far south side. About an hour and a half earlier, a woman was killed and a man wounded in a shooting in West Pullum in that neighborhood, again, on the far south side. Early Sunday, Saturday rather, a 29-year-old man was killed. He was found sitting in his car at 3:44 a.m. A 41-year-old guy was shot. You know, I mean, I think I'm the only one that's ever paid attention to it. We ignore it. Unbelievable. Anyway, a good guy with the gun was the one that tracked this guy down going 95 miles an hour. We'll have more on this incident later in the program today. A hero neighbor got his rifle, but if somebody had a gun after the first shots went out, they could have been able to stop this thing. You know, the ages of the victims are 5 to 72. You know, you got a crazy guy. Former classmates say about the shooter that he was an outcast who preached his atheism online before killing 26. It's the state's worst ever mass shooting. President Trump, although in Japan, called the Texas shooter deranged, and he is. And Trump on gun policy said it's a little bit soon to get into it. But of course, everybody on the left politicizes everything. But at the end of the day, if you find yourself, and I can only say on a personal level, if you find yourself in an environment where there's a shooting, do you want, would it be nice if there was somebody there that gave you a fighting chance? Would it be nice if there was a retired military guy that was armed? Would it be nice a former police officer in the pews that's armed? Or if there's a shooting in the school and your kids go to that school and you turn on the Fox News channel, or you turn on this radio program and you hear, oh, a shooting took place at X school in this town, in this state, in this community. Would you like to know, would it give you some hope if in fact that you knew the school had a policy of armed guards, that the school had a policy of retired police, retired military? You know, Sean Hannity has a license to carry a gun. I've carried it all of my adult life. I had a license in California, believe it or not, Rhode Island, New York, Georgia, Alabama. I've had one all my adult life. So if God forbid something's going down and I'm in the room and somebody starts shooting, do you want me there with my pistol and my training? Because I've trained in the use of a firearm since I'm 11 years old. I think it would probably be good because I would absolutely try and my very level best to stop it. And in this particular case in the church, it was another cast where he literally dropped the clip. And that gives anybody that had a gun an opportunity to end this thing and protect innocence. All right. So we'll have more on that later. We have Pastor Robert Jeffers stopping by, Pastor Daryl Scott. Both of them, I was in both their churches recently, and I was met by my car, by armed guards in each case. They're preparing for the worst. And I think every church has to at this point. Scary times we're living in. All right, we have a lot of progress that is being made on Fusion GPS. We have a lot of progress that is being made on Uranium One. We have John Solomon, Sarah Carter today. We have Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida who wants Robert Mueller to recuse himself as the special counsel, and for good reason. Then, of course, we have the very latest, Donna Brazile, and her new book, which I guess is out tomorrow, and saying things that really should blow everybody away. And not the least of which is that Hillary Clinton stole an election. She stole a primary. On top of that, we're getting more evidence every day that she and the DNC she controlled paid for the phony Russian dossier with salacious, false lies about Donald Trump, propaganda from Russia, misinformation from Russia, bought and paid for by Hillary. And Donna Brazile revealed the paranoia over Russian spying on her, snipers peering through a window. She went into great detail now. Has she considered replacing Clinton with Biden? Remember when she fainted at the 9/11 memorial in New York at the 15th anniversary? And Clinton fainted while attending that. Remember, the Secret Service basically had to hold her up. Brazile, then the interim Democratic National Committee chairwoman, had already known that Clinton had pneumonia, she said, in her upcoming book. And at that point, she says that she was seriously you know, in wrenching detail about the former first lady's first bout with pneumonia, including her seeing Clinton at a Manhattan gala 2 days before she collapsed. And Brazil said Clinton was already wobbly on her feet and, you know, had that rattled cough that we all talked about. Now, on top of that, you know, let's go back to last week. She had to call Bernie Sanders. She comes in after Debbie Wasserman Schultz and discovers, A, that Barack Obama left the DNC bankrupt. In comes Hillary Clinton. Well, I'll save you from bankruptcy, but we want control of the DNC. And that means control of hiring and staffing and every major decision. Well, that means everything that we thought was true. As Donna Brazile points out, it was rigged. Anyway, and, you know, now here we are. She stole an election. And the media, for the most part in this country, has been quiet about all of this. Donna Brazile herself, you know, said she actually feared assassination. In her book, she described her mounting anxiety about Russia's theft of emails. Well, Julian Assange says it wasn't Russia. As a matter of fact, Dianne Feinstein, there's no evidence of it. And that includes Clapper and Comey and everybody else. A year later, we don't have any evidence that anything was Russia. The only thing we know is that there was one campaign that did collude with the Russians, that did pay for Russian propaganda and lies about their opponent, and that's Hillary Clinton's.
I'm just chilling in Cedar Rapids.
Anyway, so in Donna Brazile writes that she was haunted by the unresolved murder of the DNC data staffer Seth Rich and feared for her own life, shutting the blinds to her office window so snipers could not see her installing surveillance cameras at her home. I mean, things are very dangerous out here right now. I've never seen it this bad. There was a report, too, that she had actually dedicate the book to family members and to Seth Rich, which I hadn't known until today. And remember, he was the one that was, you know, supposedly that was he got shot in the back. It was supposed to be a robbery. And there he kept, let's see, they didn't rob his money, his wallet, his gold chains, his watch, or anything. They took nothing. But that's the official story about that particular case. I guess, obviously, she knew him. Democrats are livid and viciously angry over all of this and furious about all of this. You know, the timing couldn't have been worse, Politico reports. You know, it does us no good to hash out all this stuff. At this point, we should be looking for the future, said former DNC chair, Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell. Oh, really? Ed? She steals an election and we should just move on and not pay any attention to that. We should stop talking about it. It's past. It's over. Well, maybe then if there was Trump-Russia collusion, it's over. It's past. Democrats don't talk about those things that way. We can't adjudicate it now. Really? In the United States of America, if somebody steals a primary and rigs a primary, really? We can't start talking about how do we have an electoral system that is free and fair? And we can't have free and fair elections in the United States of America. And then they're blaming and lashing out Republicans. I'll tell you who the saddest figure in all this is, Bernie Sanders. He took it and he went along with it and he still supported her publicly. And she robbed him of his opportunity, a fair shot. And if I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, I'd be livid.
This would be a joke. I cannot believe this is happening.
Poor woman.
I'm literally about to f-ing kill myself and I'm not kidding. You better fix this right now. I literally am
going to
die. I need an ambulance.
No, that was a Bernie supporter, by the way. Hannity, quick break. Right back. We'll continue. Hey, you know how I love hearing great American success stories and sharing them all with you. Well, our favorite T-shirt, underwear, sock company, Tommy John, well, that's one of them. Now, Tom Patterson grew up in a small town in South Dakota. After college, he had a successful career. He was selling medical devices on the West Coast. But he quickly became fed up with the way his undershirt kept coming untucked. So despite having zero background in men's fashion whatsoever, Tom sketched up some designs for smarter undergarments. Now starting out of his apartment and growing Tommy John to the globally recognized company it is today, well, he achieved, Tom did, the American dream. Now, of course, they're super soft, they're undershirts. Guess what? They never come untucked. Plus, all of Tommy John underwear is backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, guarantee, or it's free. Go to TommyJohn.com/Hannity for 20% off your first order, and Tommy will donate 5% of this month's sales from TommyJohn.com/Hannity to the Honor Foundation to empower Navy SEALs who are now transitioning to civilian life. That's TommyJohn.com/Hannity. So Crooked Hillary did steal the election from Crazy Bernie. Sanders responded, "We won't be distracted by your efforts to give billionaires tax cuts." That is a lie. You know who gets screwed the most in this whole Republican tax? I told you last week, Republicans have surrendered on conservative supply-side economics. And it even gets worse when you look at more of the details. They made a slight adjustment. There's going to be a new rate of 46% for some Americans. 20% of Americans pay almost the whole bill, the whole thing. 50% pay nothing. And, you know, Bernie Sanders, the fact that he knew that she was crooked and that she rigged it and that she stole it and that she undermined him and that the fix was in. Donna's revelations didn't tell us anything we didn't. Yeah, it told us a lot about what we didn't know. You know, Donna Brazile, you know, puts this out there and now every Democrat hates her. She came in. Why? Because she's exposing the truth, exposing corruption, exposing a system that is full of lies. And I mean, what are we going to do in America? We don't have free and fair elections. Now, Donna Brazile also said the Clinton campaign officials made her feel like a Patsy the Slave, which was a brutal takedown from Donna Brazile, and that they routinely disrespected her. They put her, the DNC, on a starvation. Not only did they control the DNC, but they wouldn't give them any money. They deprived it of funding and voter turnout operations. She said, quote, she was on a call. "I'm not Patsy the Slave," she recalled telling them, a reference to, you know, 12 Years a Slave in the movie. And she goes on from there. And she said she feared for her life after Seth Rich was killed. And Clinton staffers striking back, saying Brazile, well, bought into Russian propaganda. We don't have any evidence of Russian propaganda. The only Russian propaganda that we know of was bought and paid for by Hillary, her controlling the DNC up to $12 million, maybe $1 million from Obama himself. And for her to admit that she considered replacing Clinton with Biden would have been a better move for them. As much as I don't think Joe Biden would have won either. And Democratic leaders expose a widening rift now that exists. You know, it's more evident in the responses from Tom Perez, who's the new DNC chair who took over for Brazile as the permanent DNC chair late last year. And he's nuts. And Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison challenged Perez's bid for the chairmanship. Anyway, USA Today piece points out that the issues of joint funding agreements signed by presidential campaigns for Clinton and Sanders, which allowed whoever won the nomination to take control of the party, was long before that ever happened. She wasn't even the nominee at the time they inked this deal that only favored Hillary. Anyway, so you got the whole Democratic Party now in shambles. By the way, and it does add to the Fusion GPS story, doesn't it? That she was willing to use Russian propaganda, Russian lies, Russian misinformation to hijack an election from the American people. That speaks volumes. All right, quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, so we have new news as it relates to Uranium One and the dossier. There is a new report on the Hill out now, John Solomon, this just broke a few moments ago, that an early draft, now this is important, the language matters when you're putting out language. Remember, James Comey began his exoneration of Hillary Clinton on the email server scandal long before he'd interviewed those people that needed to be interviewed for the case. And that's another example of Clinton. Just like with Bernie Sanders, just like with hiring Russians to lie and put the fix in the general election, the Clintons put the fix in on everything. I mean, they want the fix certainly in with the meeting that took place on the tarmac with then Attorney General Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton. That fix was in there just before Loretta Lynch is making her decision. The fix was in against Bernie. She controlled the whole DNC. She used you know, bought and paid for Clinton DNC money, which she controlled. She tried to put the fix in on the general election. These are unethical people. There's no moral compass when it comes to them accumulating power. An early draft of the FBI Director Comey's statement closing out the Hillary Clinton email case accused the former Secretary of State. This is the earlier version of being grossly negligent in handling classified information. New memos to Congress show. Now, the tough language, that is the legal standard, gross negligence. Do you understand? He's accusing her of committing a felony if he uses that language. Now, he took that tougher language, and somebody must have said gross negligence means she committed a felony. And he changed it to extreme carelessness. We spent a lot of time talking about what the difference between gross negligence and extreme carelessness is. Now, the change is significant because federal law states that gross negligence in the handling of our nation's intelligence, well, that is a crime that gets punished criminally with prison time and fines. Now, spokespeople for the FBI and Clinton, of course, they didn't return phone calls to the Hill, but the draft was written weeks before the announcement of no charges, before they had interviewed multiple sources. And this, by the way, has been confirmed by multiple people that saw the document both before and after it was sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee this past weekend. There is evidence to support a conclusion that Secretary Clinton and others used the email server in a manner that was grossly negligent with respect to the handling of classified information. This goes back to, remember, if the FBI comes to Sean Hannity, I mean, they make a big deal about if you lie to the FBI, you're going to be charged with lying. How many people, you can't get them on the crime, but you get them on the lie to the FBI. So I have friends of mine in the FBI, and I've actually asked them, well, what about all these cases? Like, look at Denny Hastert. That case apparently was paying somebody off because he had, you know, been involved in some pedophilia years ago when he was a coach. They never, ever got him on that charge. But he did lie to the FBI, and they got him on that charge when they started asking him about, well, he's so stupid, he's taken out $9,900 because the reporting requirement is $10,000, thinking everybody's stupid. Well, you know, money people are not stupid. That's why whenever I take out money, I take out a fortune. When I take out cash, I take out a ton. And I basically want to sign a big signature. Sean Hannity, it's my money. Too bad. Otherwise, you're trying to purposely go beneath the reporting requirements. You can get in trouble for that. So I actually had long discussions with friends of mine in the FBI. I said, now let me get this straight. And the same with Martha Stewart. It's the same thing. They never got her on the underlying charge. It was lying to the FBI. So I actually had this discussion with the friends of mine that are in the FBI, and I asked them, so let me see if I got this straight. You're telling me Sean Hannity, who loves the FBI. Now, there are people within the FBI I'm not that fond of, leadership in particular. But put that aside. The people that I know in the FBI, the people that I know in drug enforcement, the people that I know in the police departments, I love these guys. And I am their biggest champion on the air, I think. I don't think there's anybody else that loves law enforcement more than I do. I'm the only one, it seems, at times in the country, high-profile cases, I give the police the benefit of the doubt. You know, we remember when they're putting their lives on the line for us, like this recent terror attack in New York, and like what happened on 9/11. But then in all these other times, everyone gets to go out there, and what do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them now? But I know guys in the FBI. I said, so let me see if I understand this. They come to Sean Hannity's house and they want to question me. And you're saying to me that if I answer, I have put myself in legal jeopardy if I'm trying to help them out, if I don't have a perfect memory. And by the way, I don't have a perfect memory. I can't tell you who was on this show Friday, if you ask me. I can tell you about Reagan's tax cuts in the 80s. I can tell you every Reagan statistics in the 80s, but I can't tell you that. I would have to dig deep in my brain, and I don't feel like digging that deep right now because it would make me look bad. But I can't tell you that. And then they're asking people sometimes to go back 1 year. 1 year ago, I don't even know where I was 1 year ago. I have no idea. So 2 years ago, I'd be a horrible witness. I'd keep saying, I don't remember. I don't honestly don't remember. If you try your best and you don't remember accurately, what my FBI friends say is, right there and then. They may not get you on whatever the crime is that they're looking at. So I'm saying I would want to help the FBI, and you're telling me if I attempted to and I screwed up with my memory, that they would charge me with lying to the FBI. So Clinton has 33,000 emails subpoenaed. She deletes them, and then she lies about the reason. Oh, those were about yoga, a wedding, a funeral, and emails to Bill. Bill doesn't have an email account. So she lied, and she deleted them. And if I deleted 33,000 emails and gave a flimsy excuse like that, I'd be put in jail. That's what I keep talking about, a two-tier justice system. And then she goes even further. She acid washes extensive, basically acid washing using bleach bit to destroy the hard drives. What the hell's going on here? And then just to make double and triply sure, she takes a hammer, has somebody take a hammer and destroy her Blackberries and destroy her iPhones. And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? You know, and when you look at all of this, not the least of which, you're not supposed to put classified, top secret, special access program, the highest level of classification, onto a mom and pop shop email server. What was she trying to hide? What was she hiding by destroying it? How did she ignore the subpoenas? What were we able to ever recover? Why did she destroy Blackberries with a hammer? The only devices she did hand over to the FBI had no SIM cards in them, meaning they're useless to the FBI. They can't get any information out of those. And so Comey, he puts together the first statement, and he actually uses the exact words for what a felony is, grossly negligent. Somebody caught it and said, well, you better change it to extreme carelessness. And just like the fix was in and the primary was rigged against Bernie, just like she tried to put the fix in and she bought and paid for Russian lies and propaganda and salacious material on Trump, she tried to put the fix in and was successful here.
Now let me tell you what we found.
I don't want to hear this right now.
Although we...
Because we all know this. I don't want to play it again. And then we've got the tarmac meeting with Loretta Lynch. Well, what was Bill talking about? Grandchildren for an hour? No. That was not what he was talking about. That's putting the fix in yet again. The Clintons are the home of the fixes. And by the way, she's not the only one. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, home of the fixes. Now, unfortunately, the House of Cards is beginning to tumble. And Comey told Congress last year that he would never have prosecuted Clinton without proof that she intended to violate a law. How do you not intend to violate the law when you delete emails? And when you take them out of the secure server at the State Department and move it into a mom and pop shop. And by the way, we know that five foreign intelligence agencies hacked into the whole thing, which means she's compromised. They've got these emails. These emails exist someplace, somewhere, somehow. And then you get to the whole Fusion GPS story. They denied for a whole year that they funded this dossier. Well, what's the dossier? The dossier, basically, you can say is collusion with Russia because she bought and paid for phony Russian lies about Donald Trump so she can impact the election with lies. She wants the fix put in there, too. The Clintons live by fixes. Lindsey Graham, to his credit, not that I'm the biggest fan, is calling for the appointment of not one but two special prosecutors to investigate Hillary. And he said this Sunday that special counsel should be appointed to investigate the Democratic Party's connection to the Trump-Russian dossier and the Uranium One deal controversies. I think he's really talking about Fusion GPS. He said, I think we need a special counsel to investigate the Fusion GPS episode between the Democratic Party, Russian operatives, and this former agent, Christopher Steele. It said on Fox News Sunday, the dirty dossier compiled by the former British spy. Well, I think he's right. By the way, did you hear that Rand Paul was attacked this weekend? I think he has, what, broken ribs? Five broken ribs? That's broken ribs hurt. Played hockey, broke a couple of ribs. It hurts to breathe. It hurts to step. It hurts to move. And it was by his creepy neighbor. And he said he described the attacker as a vocal anti-Trump socialist. Great. And you have what happened in Texas this weekend. Telling you, things are getting nuts. The FBI now is turning over new Clinton investigative documents. We're finally beginning to get being turned over to the Senate and the House. Friday night, I was able to report on Hannity that Jeff Sessions has not recused himself from Uranium One, which leads me to believe that the Uranium One investigation is ongoing. It better be. I keep saying, what is Jeff Sessions doing? I mean, if he can't investigate these, somebody needs to. These are crimes. Listen, if we have equal justice under the law, Hillary Clinton's going to jail. If we have equal justice under the law, she will go to jail. And not over stealing the election, although I think there are election laws that probably impact her conduct there, too. Funneling money to pay for phony documents from Fusion GPS. I'm told TikTok, a lot of smoking gun documents now exist. It's all now coming together. And one thing you're never going to hear from anyone in the media, wow, we were wrong. And that guy Hannity's right again. He's been right on so many things. He was right about Obama being a radical and never getting rid of his radical indoctrination. He was right about what happened in what the result would be down with George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. He was right about what happened in Ferguson. He was right on the Duke lacrosse case. He was right on Freddie Gray. He was right on the Cambridge police not acting stupidly. He was right Donald Trump could win the election. That's that guy Hannity. We're going to say we're going to put it on CNN fake news. Hannity was right. And fake Jake and Humpty Dumpty were wrong. I doubt that's going to happen. I mean, these are unbelievable times. There is no information sources that are honest and truthful anymore. I don't have any problem telling you this Republican House tax plan, it sucks more and more as I get to see it. This is not Reagan-esque. The corporate side, yes, it's good for corporations. It's good for the economy for corporate. All right, the corporate rate goes to 20%. Win-win. Corporations win. The forgotten men and women win. As it relates to multinationals bringing back trillions, it's a huge win. As it relates to the deregulation, the president already done. We're already seeing the benefits of deregulation and cutting out unnecessary bureaucratic Obama-era regulations. A win-win. In terms of the middle class in this country, except if you live in New York, New Jersey, Illinois, or California, you'll probably do well. And you know what? For those of you electing the most liberal governors, lieutenant governors, and legislators, guess what? You're going to pay a price, a massive price, for your stupidity on electing these tax and spend liberals. You know, as it relates to, you know, Reagan, tax cuts across the board, top rate 70 to 28%, that ain't this bill. It's going to be a bill as high, as high as what, 46%, a hidden, they actually came in the next day and put it higher after all the press had passed. Just pathetic. They've given up, and I'll tell you why they've given up. It's simple. They don't want to be conservative supply siders anymore, because they can't handle the class warfare rhetoric of the Democrats. And like they wouldn't use the power of the purse to defund Obamacare because they were afraid they were going to get blamed. They're afraid they're going to be called out. The Democrats are saying it anyway. And it's just not true. They're just lying about tax cuts for the rich. The rich get screwed in this tax bill, which isn't good for the economy. It's not good for the forgotten men and women. The corporate side is good, but it's gotten worse every day. Hey, listen, you've heard me talk about the, and by the way, I don't have a problem calling out weak, timid Republicans. I don't have a, you notice the media, they're only one-sided. They only care about their ideology. You don't get truth these days. When you really think about it, what are the Clintons about? They want to fix everything. Now, just stay with me. They fixed the primary. They tried to fix the general. Loretta Lynch, Tarmac, they tried to fix the email server issue. They were successful. They fixed it with Comey. They got Loretta Lynch to say it is not an investigation. What do you say? It's a matter. It's a matter. You got Comey to change the exact wording of what he said. All right, John Solomon, Sarah Carter, weigh in on all of this next. Congressman Matt Gaetz says Mueller needs to go. Pat Buchanan and Pastor Jefferson, Pastor Daryl Scott.
Why shouldn't the uranium deal be investigated?
Well, it'd be one thing if this was being done in good faith, but of course it's not. And we saw what happened with Benghazi. You can't do a good investigation if it's conducted in bad faith. And the Republicans here, investigations including the Uranium One deal, without even tell us that they wanted to do it or why, without informing myself or Mr. Cummings. So it's clear from beginning and to the end that this is a partisan effort. And you just can't conduct a good investigation if you're not operating operate in good faith, and unfortunately they're not.
There are reports that the CIA director was meeting with Chairman Nunes right before he came out to announce these new investigations. Were you brought into those conversations, or maybe those reports are not true? Maybe you can clarify.
I wasn't part of any conversations about the initiation of these new investigations, so I can't comment on what meetings or discussions took place, but I can say this. There are three committees involved in these new investigations: Judiciary Committee, Government Reform Committee, and the Intelligence Committee. This had to be orchestrated with the approval of the Speaker of the House. And so this is a partisan effort to distract. It's a partisan effort aligned with what the White House has been urging, and Fox and Breitbart, and which there was no consultation with the Democrats in Congress. And I think that tells you all you need to know about whether this is in good faith or not.
This looks a lot to me like a redux of Benghazi. This investigation is starting for political purpose. This is another investigation of Hillary Clinton.
But do you see these things, Senator, as equivalent of the Hillary Clinton campaign looking for dirt from Russians and Russians offering dirt to the Trump campaign?
If you're asking about the dossier, that was funded by a conservative online publication, Washington Free Beacon.
At first,
campaign. Wait, let me finish. Yep. And they hired a firm that was working with a British Secret Service agent. And then when they decided to drop it, apparently we now know that some of the funds to continue the investigation were paid for by the Clinton campaign. Mm-hmm. But we all do oppo research. Every candidate does oppo research on their opponent. You can ask any candidate for office, they do it. And hiring a firm to do oppo research is pretty common practice. That's not any evidence of collusion. That's what's done.
When did you learn the DNC and the Clinton campaign were behind the dossier?
I wasn't aware of the arrangement at all.
And then how could you have led the DNC and be in the dark about the dossier?
I wasn't aware of the arrangement at all.
All right, there you first heard from Adam Schiff twice, and of course Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I wasn't aware of any arrangement between the DNC and Hillary campaign's dossier. Just so happens the DNC paid for the dossier along with Hillary Clinton. And that's salacious details that were proven false as it relates to Donald Trump. And of course, they were Russian sources, Russian lies, Russian propaganda, and Russian misinformation that was spread everywhere. We have so many new developments today as it relates to both this deal, the Uranium One deal. Clinton now stole the primary from Bernie Sanders. And with us now, John Solomon, Executive Vice President of Digital Video for The Hill. Sarah Carter, investigative journalist. Welcome back, both of you. I know that you wrote over the weekend, John, the FBI has now begun turning over to Senate investigators hundreds of pages of memos regarding the Bureau's probe into Hillary Clinton's private email server. And the sources said the Justice Department notified the Senate Judiciary Committee late Friday. The FBI began transmitting memos. Now, I also can report, as I did Friday night, that the Attorney General has not recused himself from the Uranium One deal. My sources in the Justice Department have confirmed. And I have another source saying that there is an investigation.
It's an extraordinary time inside the Justice Department, Sean. There's no doubt about that. And I can tell you now that these memos are being mined, the ones that were turned over this weekend to Senate Judiciary. And we're learning some new things about what Director Comey's original statement was going to be versus what he ultimately delivered. And I think we're going to find out later today or tomorrow that the FBI, when they originally looked at this case, had a slightly different conclusion than what Director Comey ultimately declared when he closed down the email case and said Hillary Clinton shouldn't be charged with any crimes. That's what I'm hearing this afternoon.
All right, Sarah, what's your latest?
It's the same. I mean, I can tell you for months now, and Sean, you know, we've been very open about that, both on your show and in stories that we've published in the past where we've had former FBI and current FBI agents talking about particularly the case with the Clinton email server, that they were up in arms about it when that decision was made. There were FBI agents, I think I've said this before, some who threw their lunch at the television as Comey made that announcement, others who were infuriated. They believed that they had enough evidence to move forward. And what we can only hope is that the American people now, through these memos, the story that John wrote, and now that the committees have the memos, that they will get the truth. And I think that will be a vindication for a lot of people within the FBI who are doing their job.
On Fusion GPS, mm-hmm. I am told that there is new evidence that is going to emerge maybe as early as this week that will re- that will absolutely prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that, in fact, the Hillary campaign colluded with the Russians in the lead up to this election. Have either of you heard that, John?
I have not. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff being asked right now. We know that the House Intelligence Committee wants to know whether journalists were paid in connection with Fusion GPS. That's something new that just developed over the weekend. And I think that that is going to be investigated out. It'll be interesting to see if we learn something new about that in the next few days. But, you know, there's a lot of mystery surrounding what Fusion GPS did. There's very little doubt that Hillary Clinton and the DNC paid for the dossier. Now the question is, who was involved? How much did everybody know? And what did people do with that information? How did it get its way to the FBI? That's a question nobody seems to know yet.
Sarah, your take and your understanding of this. Every day I keep hearing, as big as Uranium One deal, Fusion GPS now has become an even bigger problem for the Democrats.
We could see this coming from months ago when Fusion GPS became such a big part of everybody's dialogue on television. I mean, Sean, we have Fusion GPS, which in effect and allegedly, you know, and this is coming from the Senate Judiciary Committee, who was questioning this months ago, lobbying on behalf of the Russians. They were lobbying against the Magnitsky Act in the United States. And that's allegedly what they've been accused of. And so they had people connected to them, the same players that showed up later on at this Donald Trump Jr. meeting. You know, I mean, there is so many dots here that are being connected and so many things that are unraveling. And now what we're hearing, okay, DNC, Hillary Committee, looking for Oppo Research. Oppo Research, really? When they paid Christopher Steele then paid the Russians with that money to get information. So he paid for information. Can you imagine a journalist doing that? And now it's one step further. They even believe that journalists were involved in spreading this propaganda. And this is Russian propaganda, and this is what the Russians intended to do. What it is, it's on the Democrats now.
It's so funny. Everything is flipped and everything is reversed. Let me go back to the Uranium One deal. Both of you have been reporting that in 2009, they had an FBI informant inside of Putin's network trying to corner the market on uranium in America, even though we have to import uranium. We don't have enough of it. But they knew in 2009 about bribery and kickbacks and extortion and money laundering and racketeering. Mm-hmm. And Mueller knew because he was in the charge of the FBI. That means Eric Holder, who's the head of the Justice Department, had to know. And yet nothing was done to prevent the sale a year later of Uranium One that gave these assets to, in fact, Vladimir Putin. And in spite of the talking point that they said for over a year or so now that, well, none of the uranium left America, that's not true. It went to Canada, it went to Asia, perhaps, but it definitely went to Europe. Does that mean, you know, to me, and then the Clintons got all that money back? Is it that we need a special counsel? How do you deal with the betrayal on that level, considering it's such an important, you know, mining aspect, defense mechanism for this country, the foundational material for nuclear weapons? John?
Well, I think the first question and the public interest question, even if you took Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump out of this entire episode, there's a really common sense question here. Should we be giving nuclear materials to a country whose nuclear agency was engaged in criminality at the very moment we were making that decision? That's a question. When you take all the politics out of this, that everybody should care about. And I think that that's where the congressional investigators are going to focus. Did the FBI tell the Obama administration they knew that this company was engaged in wrongdoing? If so, why did the Obama administration not follow that advice? Why did other people not know about it, like Congress, for years and years later? So I think that the first question and probably the most important question is, who knew of the criminality, and should that have been a reason to stop this entire transaction?
Well, it should have been.
Get that answer.
But I think that what I learned on...
in the sense people would say that.
What I learned on Friday, that in fact, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, never recused himself from Uranium One, and that it looks like there's an ongoing investigation as we speak, and that the DOJ has opened this investigation, and it may have happened for the last year and nobody knows about it. There was a New York Times story that was published a year ago. If you read toward the end of the story, the FBI grappled with whether to issue subpoenas in the Clinton Foundation case. The story made clear that it was related to Uranium One and that sale and the cash the Clintons received. The story makes reference to Peter Schweizer's book, which was the basis for the lengthy April of 2015 story in the New York Times. If the FBI was considering subpoenas, that mean there was an open investigation. And it seems like it's now open again.
I don't think the investigation was ever closed. And Sean, I think that was the deal there. It was open the entire time. And I think John brought up a very good question. I think beyond that, during the time that they knew all of these kickbacks, briberies, and schemes were going on, there was also a huge open concern among congressional representatives and people who were opposing the deal then because of Russia's very intimate relationship with Iran and the concerns there that they were supplying military capabilities to Iran. What was going to happen to the uranium? How far, you know, there were a lot of really valid questions, and those questions were just swept under the rug.
Well, what they did is they purposely funneled all of this and got away from all the approval process by partnering with a trucking company as a means of basically circumventing the normal process for anybody to you know, literally travel with this stuff and have access to this.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Sean, they used the back door so that they wouldn't have to approve an export permit in the name of Uranium One. They did it through a third party, and that has caught a lot of attention to members of Congress. I've talked to several members of Congress in the last couple of days, and that revelation really speaks volumes about an effort to perhaps do this under the table in a way it wouldn't be detected.
Stay right there. We'll continue. John Solomon, Sarah Carter, their work has been unbelievable, and only now are they being proven to have been right now way ahead of the curve of anybody else. And all of these stories now beginning to break ever so quickly. It's now we've gotten to the quickening stage of this onion peeling process. We'll continue. We continue. Sarah Carter, investigative reporter. John Solomon, executive vice president of digital video for The Hill. All right, but on the Uranium One deal, so if they knew about bribery, kickbacks, extortion, money laundering, racketeering in 2009, and they let Putin and his ring of spies and his illegal tactics work, and they sign off on the uranium deal, and we all think that this investigation is ongoing, only now has the NDA been lifted off the informant that has a story to tell. What's the status on that, Sarah?
Well, I know that he is preparing and he is ready to talk to Congress. So this is an effort in progress right now. His attorney, Victoria Tonsig, and I spoke earlier today, and he is ready to go. So, you know, this informant's life is very much, and they're concerned about that, too. They're concerned about how he's going to come here, how he's going to testify. I think a lot of that testimony will be done behind closed doors, and he will be able to share with the members of Congress all the information he had collected during the time he was working undercover with the FBI in the Russia, you know, with the Russian companies. And I think there's going to be so much that is going to answer so many questions for so many people. But Sean, you brought up a really good point earlier, and you talked about a special counsel. This is really going to require a special counsel or a very intensive investigation, because what you're going to see here is not just things that are related to the past, but dots that will connect into the future. And they're going to have to follow the money. This is very important, and it may end up bringing criminal charges against people.
I couldn't agree anymore. And the matter is how quickly this is all going to unfold, John.
Yeah, I think you're going to see developments on so many different fronts. I think the email case is going to come back to prominence this week, specifically because of these documents that were transmitted. I'm going to give you a term that I think we're going to hear a lot about in the next couple of days, and that is grossly negligent. Was there any evidence that the FBI believed that Mrs. Clinton's handling of email was grossly negligent? If so, it applied to the statute. There's a statute that says that's punishable if you're grossly negligent in handling classified information. I think that's going to become a major point of contention this week.
Yeah, and do you think that I agree with Sarah? I think there's going to be, you know, is this something that we can get to the bottom of through the Mueller special counsel, considering he was the FBI director and knew about Putin's motives in 2009?
I think right now the discussions that I've heard of people who are talking about and advocating a special prosecutor is that this would not be referred to Director Mueller's investigation, but instead there'd be a genesis of a new investigation. I think that's where this is heading. Now the question is, will Jeff Sessions approve that, or will he allow the congressional committees to do that work? We don't know the answer yet.
Sarah, we'll give you the last word.
I have to agree with John on that. That's going to be the next big step, and I do think it will go to somebody else. It will not go to Mueller, and I also believe that at this point in time, talking to the sources that I've been speaking to, connected to Justice Department, that this may very well become a special counsel investigation.
All right, I think I agree with that assessment. All right, we'll see you both hopefully on TV tonight, Hannity, 10 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel, 800-941-SEAN. When we come back, Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, he wants Mueller to recuse himself from the special counsel investigating Trump. He had a statement that he put out. Also, Pat Buchanan joins us today, and we will get into the sadness that happened over the weekend at this church, and this lone gunman, atheist, killing all these people, 26 people. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back on this busy breaking news day here today, right here on the Sean Hannity Show.
So we learned this week that former Trump foreign policy advisor George Papadopoulos traveled to London in March 2016. And then in April, he met with a professor who promised dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russians. Have you seen any evidence that this dirt, these emails, were ever given to the Trump campaign?
Not so far.
Not so far. Have you seen any communications that suggested that the Trump campaign wanted them to release them through a different means? Because obviously they were ultimately released by WikiLeaks.
No, I have not.
There is already a special counsel reviewing the conduct of the Trump administration. I think what the American people want to see, and what I suspect a majority of this committee will want to see, is ultimately evidence produced to us, and then the subsequent appointment of a special counsel to ensure that the real criminals are held accountable for their conduct that has undermined the country. I'll now speak to the specific germanity points, and I'd like to begin on the matter of privilege. My language only impacts those documents which currently exist. And so there is no requirement under the language that I have produced for a new investigation to be undertaken or for new documents to be generated. If there are not documents responsive to the request made, that will simply be the response that the committee receives. And thus, the privilege is not impaired and the amendment would be germane. As to whether or not the amendment expands the scope of the matter at hand, the gentlelady from Washington's amendments seeks to find information regarding the firing of James Comey. And my substitute amendment seeks information regarding the firing of James Comey. We simply have a more detailed and, I would say, more focused approach to what might be those things that Mr. Comey was fired about. And what's interesting about Mr. Comey's service is that that service did not solely occur under the presidency of Donald Trump. Mr. Comey was director of the FBI under the prior administration. And Mr. Trump has publicly stated, I should say President Trump has publicly stated, that Mr. Comey was fired not just as a consequence of his conduct during the Trump administration, but as a consequence of his conduct under the Obama administration. This is not a view uniquely held by Mr. Trump. It's a view held by many Democrats, something that was certainly illuminated during the chairman's opening statement. And so if there is an amendment that seeks information regarding Mr. Comey's firing, it is entirely within the scope of that amendment to determine whether or not Mr. Comey's refusal to investigate the crimes of the Clinton Foundation, whether Mr. Comey's observance of the unmasking of members of the Trump transition team, whether Mr. Comey's potential participation or knowledge of the Fusion GPS matter, where there was active collusion with Russia to undermine Donald Trump both before and after he was sworn in as president, it is entirely within the scope. It is simply more focused, and I would say, Mr. Chairman, more in line with the views of the American people.
Hillary, is there a difference between your team paying for this opposition research and Donald Trump's people working with the Russians to influence the election? Is there a difference?
Of course there is. And, you know, I think most serious people understand that. This was research started by a Republican donor during the Republican primary. And then when Trump got the nomination for the Republican Party, the people doing it came to my campaign lawyer and said, you know, would you like us to continue it?
Right.
And he said, yes. He's an experienced lawyer. He knows what the law is. He knows what opposition research is. And, you know, from my perspective, it didn't come out before the election, as we all know. And what also didn't come out, which I think is an even bigger problem, as I write in the book, is that the American people didn't even know that the FBI was investigating the Trump campaign because of connections with Russia starting in the summer of 2016.
Right.
So I know that Voters should have had that information. That's something that may have influenced some people. And it's part of what happens in a campaign where you get information that may or may not be useful, and you try to make sure anything you put out in the public arena is accurate. And
Right. So
this thing didn't come out until after the election, and it's still being evaluated. But the fact of the FBI investigation into the Trump campaign and Russia should have come out.
Oh, okay. But it hasn't. And there's no evidence still. And it's a year later. And it never ends. And here she's admitting, oh, yeah, of course I paid for the dirt, dossier, propaganda, lies, fusion, GPS. Oh, and by the way, that was during the time I was robbing the primary election from poor Bernie Sanders. And wasn't that long ago that she was colluding with the Russians on, of course, Uranium One to give up 20% of our assets. Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida wants Mueller to recuse himself from the special counsel investigating Trump, as you heard. And Mr. Gaetz, welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, it's great to be on, Sean.
All right. So in 2009, he was the FBI director, Mueller, and he knew that Putin had set his sights on getting into the American uranium market. By the way, we don't have enough uranium. We have to import uranium. Why we'd ever give up 20% of our assets is just dumb. Anyway, Mueller, we now know that they had an FBI informant inside of Putin's network in the United States. Crimes like bribery, extortion, racketeering, money laundering was all going on, and they knew it. That means Eric Holder had to know it, and they still allowed this sale a year later to go through. Does that now implicate
him? It certainly does, Sean. I have called for Robert Mueller to step down because we are at risk of a coup d'etat in this country if we allow totally unaccountable people to undermine the duly elected president of the United States when they have clear conflicts that any lawyer would recognize. As you have been pointing out on your show, Sean, since 2009, we had evidence that the Russians were trying to undermine our uranium assets and that the specific tools that they were using were bribery and extortion. At the same time, you had hundreds of thousands of dollars going to Bill Clinton. You had Hillary Clinton's State Department greasing the wheels for this Uranium One deal. And oh, by the way, Robert Mueller's Justice Department was stopping a confidential informant who had this information from coming forward and telling Congress and the American people. And so now it's absolutely impossible for Robert Mueller to continue to investigate Russia's connections to the United States, to their connections to the 2016 election, and all of this ancillary information, because you can't scrutinize a deal that you were a part of. That's why Mueller should step down, and we should get past this and on to the important work to improve quality of life for the American
people. I agree, and all of that, you know, certainly is put in the background, unfortunately, and I'm not even happy with the House bill on the economic plan. I mean, it's getting worse and worse by the day, which is unfortunate. You know, I mean, it was pretty good on the corporate side. Individuals getting clobbered with this so-called tax cut. I'll take no tax cut at this rate, thank you very much, but, you know, we certainly need the corporate components of this, because I think that's something that will jumpstart the economy. But Robert Mueller did know. So he can't investigate himself, nor can he investigate Rod Rosenstein, who knew, nor can he investigate Eric Holder, who knew. I mean, who's going to put them under oath? Is it another special counsel we need, or can Congress do this?
Well, as late as July 27th, the chairman of the judiciary and 19 other members of the Judiciary Committee signed a letter demanding that Jeff Sessions appoint a special counsel to investigate Fusion GPS and the Uranium One deal. We have still not received a response from Jeff Sessions. I personally asked Jeff Sessions whether or not he would appoint a special counsel to look into Uranium One. He then said that his Russia recusal stopped him from being able to participate in that discussion, and he got up and walked out of the room.
My sources tell me from last Friday that, in fact, he didn't recuse himself from the Uranium One deal, and it's my belief that there is an ongoing investigation.
Well, that is not what he told me. It's not what he told Ron DeSantis, and it's not what he told Jim Jordan and Bob Goodlatte. So there were Judiciary Committee members present when he said that he had recused himself. I hope he hasn't recused himself. I want our wonderful Attorney General to do the job of the Attorney General and appoint a special counsel to look into these important matters. And what I don't want to see is some of the deep staters over at the Department of Justice try to hamstring the investigation into Hillary Clinton when there's a totally unaccountable Bob Mueller going after the president of the United States. I mean, if a special counsel was appointed to look into Donald Trump, where they've produced no real evidence, Why in the world have we not appointed a special counsel when you've got the Democratic Party colluding with Russia to get a dossier on President Trump that is false and intended to undermine his presidency both before and after he was elected?
You're raising great points.
Either it's a double standard or you've got a circumstance where Bob Mueller is investigating a deal he was a part of approving.
Well, I think it certainly all needs to be investigated. I hope that happens, and it's got to be bigger than a congressional investigator. I think you need a special counsel, and I think if you got that, indictments would be handed down pretty quickly. I don't see how we will survive as a nation with equal justice under the law if Hillary Clinton is not indicted on numerous issues and numerous crimes, starting with the email, subpoenaed emails, and the bleach bit, obstruction of justice and smashing, you know, Blackberries with hammers and not giving over to the FBI the subpoenaed emails and deleting them. And then I can't believe, you know, all the money and kickbacks. Nobody would ever give up 20% of our uranium. What happened in that particular deal? And, yeah, Fusion GPS, we do have real Russia collusion. We have real evidence of Russia collusion.
And the American people are tired of this double standard, Sean. You pointed out on your show every night, there's one set of rules for the Clintons where they get to basically pick their own investigators. They get to fill out deposit slips from Russia while Hillary Clinton is approving major deals that undermine our nuclear security, where they get to go out and fund research into Donald Trump that isn't true and then have the audacity to point the finger at Donald Trump for collusion. And what frustrates me as a member of the Judiciary Committee, I can't get a straight answer into who's really looking at these matters. I want to hear the Attorney General say that we are appointing a special counsel and we are going to pursue the real crimes from the real criminals with the same vigor and under the same standards that people have been attacking Donald Trump. And until that happens, I worry that we don't have equal justice in this country.
All right, Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, I agree wholeheartedly, and I hope you can inspire your colleagues with the passion that you have, because I know that I'm right. We've been right a long time, and nobody's been listening to us being right the whole time. Anyway, thank you, sir. We'll get to your calls when we get back. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. All right, let's head to our busy phones. 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program at the top of the hour. Patrick J. Buchanan, well, he joins us in the next hour. Pastor Robert Jeffers, Pastor Daryl Scott. We'll talk about the tragedy, the shooting in the church in Texas yesterday. First, let us say hi to Robert, Oklahoma City. Oklahoma, what's going on?
Hello, Sean. Thanks for your time. Just a quick comment. Last Friday, you mentioned Donna Brazile and her book, and you said that she had the integrity to
She has the integrity to tell a truth about how corrupt her party is, and I give her credit for it.
I don't think you can give her say the word integrity and use her. She's been in the tank with the Clintons a long time, and I suspect that there's something beyond this. I really do. I cannot believe that you can use the word integrity and her name in the same sentence, Sean.
Listen, nobody's blind to the fact that she gave questions to Hillary Clinton when she was at CNN. I'm not ignoring the fact. I am saying for her to come out in a book and admit something that's true, that the election was stolen, as she has, and that she wanted to replace Hillary after her collapse, and she wanted somebody like Joe Biden in there. I think it took.
I don't believe that, Sean. I don't believe that. That's.
I do. I absolutely believe it. There's no upside except maybe for creating controversy, but that's not the person. Donna is a hardcore Democrat. Hard left. I understand it. I can accept Donna Brazile fighting for her beliefs because she believes them. I can't accept people that are phony, that, you know, put their finger in the wind and decide which way they're going. She has convictions. Did she make a big mistake? Yeah, she's the first one that'll tell you that. Anyway, appreciate it. 800-941. Sean, Rocky is in Connecticut. Rocky, how are you? Glad you called.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure being able to speak with you.
Yes, sir. Glad you called.
Actually, I'm calling because my wife and I, we saw the movie Let There Be Light.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. A little bit of a tearjerker, of course. But it was a great movie. My wife and I both enjoyed it. And I wanted to call, compliment you. I thought you did a great part.
Thank you. I haven't highlighted the fact that I'm actually in the movie, but I play a rather small part, and I play myself, which is pretty good. Let me ask you this. In the theater, did you see a lot of people crying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were a few people crying. Yeah.
Yeah. And
mostly
did you...
older people, because I went during a senior matinee. And
oh, okay.
I'm 78 years old.
Good for
Those
you.
People there were my age, and like, a few more had tears in their eyes. Yeah.
You know, I didn't know till last week that movies play all during the week. I'm so stupid, because I never even think of going to a movie. I just thought maybe on holiday weekends they did that, because you always hear about, you know... Well, anyway, look, the movie has been such a bigger hit than we ever dreamed, at least I ever dreamed, and I am happy and proud of the product, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I really am. And thank you so much. We really appreciate it, Rocky. Quick break, 800-941-SHAWN. News Roundup Information Overload is next.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload.
Here right now is Johnny Langendorf. He was driving past the church when he saw the shooting. And Johnny, can you tell me what happened next?
I pulled up to the intersection where the shooting happened, and I saw two men exchanging gunfire, the other being a citizen of the community. And the shooter of the church had taken off, fled in his vehicle, and the other gentleman came and he said we needed to pursue him, that he just shot up the church. And so that's what I did. I just acted and got him off the road. And
okay, could you tell me again, you said that you heard the you saw the two men exchanging gunfire, and then one of the men, someone you recognized, jumped in the car?
No, I didn't know him at all. I didn't recognize him. He just was a member of the community. And whenever he came to my vehicle in distress and with his weapon, he explained very quickly what happened, and he got in the truck, and I knew that it was just time to...
It was time to go.
Yes, sir.
All right, so tell me about that. Tell me about following this guy. Was it high speed? Was he driving normally all over the place? What was it like?
No, sir. He got a little bit of a jump on us, and so we were doing about 95 down 539, going around traffic and everything, and... eventually, he came to kind of a slowdown, and after that, we got within just a few feet of him, and then he got off the road.
How did that happen? Did you guys bump him, or did he lose control by himself?
He just lost control, and then that's whenever I put the vehicle in park, because I was still on the phone with dispatch, and mm-hmm. the other gentleman jumped out and had his rifle drawn on him, and he didn't move after that.
Okay, so I understand you guys called police as you were chasing him.
Yes.
Now, did you lead them to that point? Did they meet you there? Or
no, we led them to there. He was headed northbound on 539, and everybody else was headed to the church. For all the officers were responding to the church.
So how long before police arrived at that scene?
From the time we actually stopped, it was about 5 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes.
And so the neighbor just kept his gun trained on him for that long?
Yes, sir.
All right. Was the man moving? Was he injured?
No, I don't know. We didn't get close enough.
So what next? What happened once the police arrived?
Just the police arrived, and they pushed us back, and then they took care of the rest. I didn't see anything after that.
All right, Johnny, what was going through your mind during this chase? I mean, you're chasing a shooter. You've heard he's just shot up a church in your hometown. What's going through your mind?
Try and get him, to get him apprehended or whatever needed to happen. I mean, it was strictly just acting on what the right thing to do was.
Right. Thank you very much, Johnny Langendorf.
My administration will provide its full support to the great state of Texas and all local authorities investigating this horrible crime. I've spoken just a few minutes ago with Governor Abbott, and we offer our thanks to the first responders, the FBI, all of the many people involved, both federal and otherwise. Ultimately, they stopped the suspect and rendered immediate life-saving aid to certain victims of the shooting. I will continue to follow the developments closely. All of America is praying to God to help the wounded and the families of the victims. We will never, ever leave their side. Ever.
All right, that is the president. He was in Japan reacting to the fact 26 churchgoers in Sutherland Springs, Texas yesterday were literally mowed down in church. The first voice you heard was from one of the heroes that actually took off after the shooter, and they were able to chase him down to the point where he decided to take his own life. And so sad, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, said this morning that this was not a random act of violence. And he said that he thinks a connection between the suspect and the church where the attack occurred is too soon emerging. Well, we've learned that apparently there was a domestic situation where he had relatives or in-laws that were at that church. That's part of the understanding. But the broader, bigger question now is, how do you protect people even just going to church? I've said for a long time in schools when we had all these school shootings that the single best thing you can do is hire armed, retired police and military and put them in the school. So that if, God forbid, something happens at a moment's notice, they're there. We have a fighting chance to save people's lives. Well, the same thing would be here. I recently was at Pastor Robert Jeffers' church in Dallas, Texas, and he's the pastor of the First Baptist Church there. And Pastor Daryl Scott, founder and senior pastor at the New Spirit Revival Center. And I talked to both of them. It just so happens when I was there, about safety and protection of their congregants and their church, and both of them had unbelievable amounts of protection in their churches individually. Pastor Jeffers, you are very adamant that you take incredible measures to protect the people that go to your church every week.
Absolutely. I think that's the responsibility of a pastor to protect the sheep. And look, you know, Sean, we cover six
blocks. So when I go to your church, you consider me a sheep in the pews. Is that what it is?
I guess sheep, Sean.
I'm kidding. I guess sheep.
You know, the fact is, we've got that responsibility to protect our members. We have hired officers. We have some plain clothes, some uniformed. But we think that's a responsibility we have. And also in Texas, of course, we have concealed carry. So I would say a quarter to half of our members are also carrying guns as well. So if anybody tried in our church what this guy did in Sutherland Springs, he might get one shot off, but it would be the last thing he did in this life. Yeah. And you know, Sean, you don't have to be a big church like ours to have security. And this is what I hope all churches will remember.
But a lot of small churches, you know, it's a lot of money sometimes. If you don't have congregants, now I know this is in Texas, I know they have the right to carry, but there are some churches that are small and maybe they think they're not going to be a target. That's not true.
No, it's not true. In fact, the last several attacks we've seen in America have been on smaller churches. And look, every church can go to their local police department and have them do a threat assessment of their facility. They can use volunteers to watch what goes on in the worship services. They can have an evacuation plan. They can have common sense principles like we have, Sean. Yeah. You can't bring a backpack into our sanctuary. No church ought to allow that, given the evil world in which we live.
I agree with you, and I think it's necessary. Now, it was nice of both of you, Pastor Scott, good to talk to you again, that when I arrived at both your locations of both your churches, you had armed security waiting for me before I even walked in the door. You met me in my car. Pastor.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I think you're a bigger target than me, Pastor Scott. I mean, I'm just guessing.
But you know what? Those same armed security are out there waiting for me every week as well.
Yeah. Isn't it sad it's necessary, though?
Yeah, and my guys, it's sad. You know, my guys, not only do they carry, they are not only armed, they're armed enthusiasts. I mean, some of them have two or three different firearms at the same time.
Yeah.
And what I also do is, and you know, once the election, during this election campaign that the president had, I had to make sure that I had uniformed police visible on site just in case somebody was even thinking about something. And it's just, I mean, it is what it is in America today. It's a very real reality that churches are targets. And when you have assemblies of where the public can come in like that, you don't know who's out there. You don't know what their motives are, and you can't take anything for granted. Now, I don't preach nervous, wondering if somebody out there going to shoot me, but I do have people that have eyes on the congregation, and they're locked and loaded, and they're ready to go.
You know, my colleague on the Fox News channel, Fox and Friends, Ainsley Earhart, actually made the comment, you know, that church is where she feels closer to God. And a lot of people, I feel that, too. This is, you know, his house. And some people tried to take that out of out of context, and it was obvious what she was saying, because we all feel sorry for the families. And but if I'm going to go, I mean, if I'm in his house trying to worship him and ask him for forgiveness, I totally understood what she was saying as a Christian pastor.
Well, I do, too. And look, I was with Ainsley earlier this morning. We were talking about that conversation. She said exactly what the mother of this girl, the pastor's wife, said about her daughter who died. She said her daughter would have wanted to leave this world from a church surrounded by her friends. So what Ainsley said was absolutely perfect.
And it's from a Christian perspective. I mean, most people go to church because they want to get closer to God. I mean, we're not perfect people. And
no. No, we're not. And look, you know, this thing about evil, we've got to acknowledge evil is in the world. And we hear all of this about gun control right now. Look, in the hands of a murderer, a gun killed 26 people. But in the hands of a good Samaritan, a gun was used to stop evil. It's not the gun that is the problem. It was the evil in this murderer's heart. And until we address that, Sean, we're just trying to put a Band-Aid on a cancer.
Well, what are they going to do? They'll drive a truck through the church doors if they don't have it, or they'll use ammonium nitrate. Pastor Scott, I mean, it's sad that this is the way it is, but I think this ought to be.
I really believe.
Yeah, go ahead.
That this is the product of this atheistic, anti-Christian sentiment that is being programmed into this nation. There is no other faith under attack without external defenses like Christianity. Christianity is under attack in America, and it has been under attack for quite some time, and to the extent that churches have become a target, but you don't see other religions that have to have that same type of fear that Christianity has, that anti-Christians will come in there with the intent to inflict bodily harm. But that's why, you know, Jesus said, watch and pray. And that's what we do in church. We pray, but we watch too. And another thing I find significant is that when they came to arrest Jesus in the garden, Peter pulled his sword out, which means that all the while he was walking with Jesus, he was concealed carrying at the same time.
that's such a good point.
With the Lord, and he still kept his seat.
Hey, by the way, Pastor Jeffers, when I was in Pastor Scott's church, he asked me to preach. I'm not a preacher.
You did awfully well on our stage, Sean.
Well, I wasn't but I'm not a preacher. I answer questions with you, but he wanted me to come with a sermon. And we have a slight disagreement, Pastor Jeffers, on this issue of talking in tongues. I think that.
Just don't preach about that.
Well, I didn't. I did not do that, but I hope I did a good job for both of you. It was actually real.
Well, you did, and you can come and preach in any language you want to at our church, Sean.
Well, I appreciate it. Listen, our thoughts and prayers are with your fellow Texans there, Pastor Jeffers. And
thank you.
I mean, it's just so sad. They go to worship God, and this is what happens. It's unbelievable. Such a dark world at times. All right, thank you both for being with us. So predictable. Let me play the media reacting to what happened in this Texas church. They do what they always do. They rush to judgment. Blame the gun.
We are urged to not politicize, to not talk about it. And then a week or 10 days pass, and we're talking about something completely different.
Right. Well, you're urged to do that after Newtown, after Las Vegas, after Aurora, after the slaughters everywhere. And it's way past time to talk about it. I mean, it has to be done.
But this type of, to your point, proliferation of mass casualty events like this, we have to do something. Not doing anything and expecting a different outcome, Chris, is the definition of insanity.
Just when is a good time? Just when is the right time for the president to take on this issue? Or is he content as others who support the Second Amendment with very little restrictions, are they content with the status quo? Is this just the way it's going to be, and we're just going to have to deal as a country with these mass shootings exploding every month or so, and having to deal with the consequences? Is that the status quo? Is that the new normal that the president is comfortable with?
Richard Blumenthal, who tweeted out, horror, heartbreak, shame, prayers are important but insufficient. After another unspeakable tragedy, Congress must act or be complicit.
So, I mean, we're watching this slaughter in America. You know, are our political leaders doing anything at all? to stop it.
First, the Second Amendment in this case has nullified the right to live for many people in this church. And I think a national discussion has to happen. It's not too, you know, we constantly run away from it. But we're going to keep doing this until we have that.
You have to do something to limit the damage of these firearms. So that's where you get into either an assault rifle ban or limiting the number of bullets in a cartridge. So it's both of these two things that we've got to work on in Congress.
Since I arrived at Congress this year, I've been talking about limiting magazine capacity in guns, and this is just another incident, probably the fourth or fifth this year, that could have been, if not prevented, certainly the damage would have diminished greatly if we had just made small changes to our gun laws.
It's fundamentally a problem in America, and it's not going to fix every shooting. That's the argument they make. Well, seatbelts won't stop every car fatality either, and we can't get even the Congress to give us one sentence to say that you can't have bump stocks.
No fly, no buy. There is unanimity in favor. In fact, the majority of American people, 95%, favor background checks, including the majority
of gun
owners.
It should be harder to get a gun than it is to get a beatician's license.
He is in an area of the world that has some of the most restrictive gun laws, and as a result has some of, or at least we can also say, has some of the smallest numbers of deaths by guns. So it is something that often when you travel across the world, whether it's in Asia or Europe, puzzles our friends and our allies about the United States and these mass shootings. But for now, it's a time for the president to be once again, as we've seen him again for the third time in about a month, comforter in chief.
It's so predictable after every single attack, whenever it is. But they don't say anything when it's something other than a gun. Did you ever notice that? They never say a word. Oh, let's ban ammonium nitrate. Let's ban cars. Oh, didn't we have a recent incident? Cars being used to hurt individuals? You know, how many more examples do you need? Evil exists in the heart, and a gun can defend innocent people. Patrick J. Buchanan is next.
Welcome back, Donna.
Thank you, John.
Let's get some facts on the table first. As DNC chair, you didn't have the power on your own to replace Hillary on the ticket.
No, but as you well know, the charter of the DNC, as well as the conventional rules, say that the chairperson shall, in consultation with the leadership in Congress and others. And so I had to put it on the table, George, because I was under tremendous pressure after Secretary Clinton fainted to have a quote-unquote plan B. I didn't want a plan B. Plan A was great for me. I supported Hillary, and I wanted her to win, but we were under pressure.
So how serious was this? You're right that you got a call from Vice President Biden at the time. Did you mention this to the Vice President?
No, I did not. I mean, look, everybody was calling to see, do you know anything? How is she doing? And of course, my job at the time, George, was to reassure people, not just the Vice President, but also reassure the Democratic Party, the members of the party, that Hillary was doing fine and that she will resume her campaign in the following week.
Do you still think that Biden and Booker would have won?
Well, you know, I had a lot of other combinations. This was something that you play out in your mind. But at the time, I was sitting next to Charlie Baker, who was her chief of
Clinton's campaign.
Yeah, that's right. And Charlie and I put down, well, we had a lot of rumors coming. I had the former chair of the DNC calling me, Donald Fowler Jr. I mean, senior, what are you doing? Look, the bottom line is she resumed campaigning. I went on TV to say that the campaign was back on track. Let me just address what my former colleagues. I wasn't a staff person. I did not work for the Hillary Clinton campaign. I was not on their daily strategy calls. I had nothing to do with their data analytics. I was the chair of the Democratic National Committee. I was concerned about the entire party, not just the presidential, but the senatorial, congressional, and all of the other
From the sound
campaigns.
Of it sounds like you had a pretty dysfunctional relationship with the high command in Hillary's campaign. You even talk about telling them at some point, I'm not Patsy the slave.
Oh, George, let me tell you something. I could not control the purse string of the Democratic Party. And I had to figure out what was going on within the party, that the chair of the party, and remember, I wasn't just the chair, I'm also a vice chair. I was an officer for 8 years. 8 years under President Obama. I knew what was going on within the party. I become chair and I'm trying to write a check for something. I raised the money and they're like, you got to get signed off from Brooklyn. I said, Brooklyn? This wasn't a standard joint fundraising agreement. They had a separate memorandum of understanding and I needed to break that. But in order to break it, I would cause a great commotion. So Yeah, I'm not patching the slave because I got sick and tired of people telling me how to spend money when all I was trying to do, I wasn't getting a salary. I was basically volunteering my time. And what I was trying to do, George, was to increase the level of enthusiasm and passion for Hillary Clinton and the rest of the ticket all across the country.
There's a lot of traffic on Twitter right now. I've gotten emails from Democrats,
I bet.
Passionate Democrats, who say they feel betrayed by all this. Any regrets?
Do I regret taking on a job the second time in my life as chair of the party, cleaning up everybody's mess, taking all of the incoming, being unable to spend funds that I raised? Do I regret being on the road 100% of the time, being hacked by the Russians, being harassed, getting death threats? Do I regret any of that? George, this was worse than Hurricane Katrina in terms of the emotional toll. But do I regret standing up for what's right, helping Hillary Clinton, helping the Democratic Party? And let me just say this. As somebody who went through the hacking experience, being able to tell the truth about what happened with the Russians, the attack on our government, do I regret any of that? No, I wish I could have done more, George.
But you think this helps for the book to come out?
This is a lesson of 2016. If I released it next year, they would say, Donna, you're impacting on 2018. If I release it the fall, Donna, you're impacting. George, for those who are telling me to shut up, they told Hillary that a couple of months ago. You know what I tell them? Go to hell. I'm going to tell my story. I want to tell my story, George, because this is a story of a young girl who started in American politics at the age of 9, who continues to fight each and every week of her life. I went down to Virginia last week to kick off the canvassing campaign. Nobody paid me to do that. Nobody. I'm not on the payroll, George. I care about my country. I care about our democracy. And I say go to hell because why am I supposed to be the only person that is unable to tell my story?
All right, 23 now till the top of the hour. Donna Brazile, her new book, of course, she's saying, yeah, it was rigged. It was fixed. The election was stolen. And she said she was under tremendous pressure to have a plan after Hillary Clinton did faint. Remember, I got criticized for saying, basically, without the Secret Service behind her, she had passed out. And anyway, she also says, I am not the patsy, the slave, because I get sick and tired of people telling me how to spend the money. And then she tells critics to go to hell, straight to hell. And she claims that she was hacked by the Russians. All right, we got to see the evidence of that. With us now is Patrick J. Buchanan. Pat, welcome back to the program. Look, I'm sure you're like me. I've known Donna Brazile for years, get along with her on a personal basis. She's lovely, friendly, kind. She's good at what she does. She's tough. She's a competitor. But this is a pretty courageous thing that I think she's done and is getting excoriated by her, well, fellow liberals.
Right. Well, I've debated Donna Brazile any number of times. She's very friendly. I get along with her well. She's very pretty close to my sister as well, Bay.
Yeah.
But I will say this, Sean. She's gone and dynamited the outhouse at the DNC.
Dynamited the outhouse?
It's been a long time cleaning this baby up.
Well, I don't think there is any cleaning it up. But here's the thing. You know, think back to Watergate. You were there in the Nixon administration. All right. It was about a break-in. The break-in was, oh, were you trying to steal information? What was the information supposed to be used for? The information was supposed to be used to benefit one campaign over another. People went to jail. Now you've got a case where the DNC signs an agreement. They are bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton. And now we know that they paid Fusion GPS and the Clinton campaign paid Fusion GPS and Obama kicked in money for fake, phony, fraudulent Russia propaganda misinformation. So this whole Russia influencing the election issue is now totally boomerang back on all of them on the left.
You know, here, Sean, you've been talking, I watch you at night on what happened back there with Uranium One, but in this one, Mueller has a real clear obligation to investigate this because this involves Russians who tried to affect the outcome of the election by giving either lies or telling what they thought was the truth to this British agent who was working for Fusion GPS, and the objective was to deep dirt dive on Donald Trump and bring him down. In other words, there was actual Russian collusion with the political party through this extended connection in order to bring Trump down. And I think on this, there really is no question but that Mueller's got to investigate it.
Mueller's got to, or another special counsel. I mean, you know, this is the thing. This goes back to the the Attorney General and his recusal in all things Hillary or Russia, which was obscene to me because now you don't have equality here. I am told, Patrick J. Buchanan, that massive, massive amounts of progress have been made as it relates to there will be collusion. We'll be able to prove collusion. We will be able to show that the collusion was the Democrats and the Russians. It was never Trump, and they lied through their teeth. And that it's now, we're literally looking at a ticking time bomb and a clock now that's about to explode in the media in this country shortly, sooner than you think.
We have what we know is the Clinton campaign sent money to this law firm, Perkins Coie, or whatever the name of it is. The DNC sent money. They sent together somewhere between $9 and $12 million. This money, some of this was given to Fusion GPS, and they gave it to this guy Stevenson, and he's dealing directly with Russian spies and ex-employees of the FSB. So you've got the Russians deeply involved here. You've also got immediately a credibility issue. When what's-his-name Podesta went before one of those Senate, I think the Senate Intel Committee, he had the lawyer for this Perkins Coie sitting right beside him, the guy who let out the contract to Fusion GPS, and Podesta said, I have no idea where the money came from for this Fusion GPS, and the guy was sitting beside him. As somebody said, I think it was Susan Collins, a senator.
Yeah.
I mean, he and whoever it was representing the Clinton campaign, they've got to get up before that committee again.
They got to. Well, I also think between that and uranium one, could you think of any possible reason as a country we don't have enough uranium? We have to import uranium. Is there any reason whatsoever that you can intellectually arrive at a conclusion that you'd allow Vladimir Putin to get control of 20% of it when we're importing uranium? And then you gave it to him after he sent in his spies that we now have reported were using bribery, racketeering, kickbacks, money laundering, extortion as a means of getting his influence in this market. And then they gave him the approval anyway.
This is where, Sean, you're right. You need a separate, an utterly separate counsel for this investigation. The reason being, I mean, Mueller was the head of the FBI when that investigation was going on, and that investigation did not prohibit the transfer of the uranium indirectly to the Russians. So that is that's something that's got ought to be investigated separately. But I do think this, in that case, given how long ago it was, unless you can prove a direct quid pro quo for that $145 million that went into the Clinton Foundation, or the $500,000 that went into Bill's account, unless you can get some kind of evidence that there was a quid pro quo there, I doubt that they're going to open it up. And again, but the same problem we've had all along is the Justice Department basically has been neutered.
Well, it seems like they're paralyzed, Pat, on a lot of different levels. Let me play Dianne Feinstein, was on one of the Sunday programs this week and was asked specifically if there's any evidence of Trump campaign ever got any dirt on Hillary from Russia, now that we know that, in fact, the Clinton campaign got it on Trump. Listen to this.
So we learned this week that former Trump foreign policy advisor George Papadopoulos traveled to London in March 2016. And then in April, he met with a professor who promised dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russians. Have you seen any evidence that this dirt, these emails, were ever given to the Trump campaign?
Not so far.
Not so far. Have you seen any communications that suggested that the Trump campaign wanted them to release them through a different means? Because obviously they were ultimately released by WikiLeaks.
No, I have not.
All right, it was released by WikiLeaks. Remember, I'm the only one, Pat, in the country that's interviewed Julian Assange. I've interviewed the guy five times. He's repeatedly said it's not Russia. It's not a state. So they have no evidence, but we do have it on Clinton-Russia collusion. And it's getting, Pat, you've known me a long time. Tick-tock, Pat. Stay tuned. It's going to be massive.
Well, listen, Nate, you know, we've got the we have all the dots connected there, you know, where it went from, you know, Hillary's campaign and DNC. They go to the law firm. The law firm goes to Fusion GPS. They go to the British spy. He goes to his Russian buddies. They get the dirty dossier all put together, the best parts of it in the very first month. And back it goes all across D.C. And it goes into even the FBI, which which wants to put this British spy on the payroll.
It's well, and that's James Comey, who wants to actually pay him.
Exactly. I mean, this is, I cannot, this is what bothers me about the, really, the media, it really does, because it's transparent that you had real Russian attempt to influence the outcome of the election, to smear Trump, and to give this, the so-called secrets of the Russian FSB, give them to Hillary Clinton's campaign or to her representative, the British spy, and let them go in the American elections, and that would have sunk Trump.
Pat, between Uranium One and between the dossier and between the Clinton email server scandal and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a house of cards that has been built on nothing but corruption. You were there in the Watergate days. I think this is going to turn out in history to be the biggest boomerang back on any one party than we have ever seen. And to see that Hillary now stole the election, the primary for poor Bernie Sanders, that the fix was in from the get-go?
You know, that looked to me, the way the monies were done there, that deal, the monies were, you know, Hillary the monies were to be sent directly to Hillary, according to the limits, directly to the DNC, then to the state parties, but the state parties rerouted the funds around to the DNC.
And right back to Hillary.
On Hillary's. I mean, where's the Federal Election Commission?
Where's the special counsel? By the way, is Mueller too conflicted? Does he need to go?
I think the test of Mueller is, since he's supposedly investigating the Russian connection,
right?
The test to him is whether he goes in to the Hillary DNC Russian connection through Fusion GPS. They have got to go into that. I don't see how they can avoid that and maintain credibility.
I don't either. I can tell you, Pat, stay tuned. TikTok, a lot is coming. I know that a lot is coming. I know for a fact a lot is coming. It's not good if you're on Hillary's team, okay?
Okay, I'll be watching at 9, Sean.
All right, Pat Buchanan, thank you. The original renegade himself. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity tonight, full, complete investigations. Now we've got Comey changing the wording away from a felony to protect Hillary. We'll have the latest information on that. New information on Fusion GPS, how the Clintons want to rig everything. John Solomon, Jay Sekulow, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, Sebastian Gorka, and then how Hillary stole the election from Bernie Sanders, Doug Schoen, Daryl Parks. All coming up, Hannity, our new time, 9 Eastern. If you can't watch it, set your DVR. Never miss an episode. See you tonight at 9. Back here tomorrow.